just in a slightly different, from a slightly different perspective or in a slightly different language. So, as I say, some of an acquaintance with this type of language is also useful if you maybe need to go off and read certain topics, which perhaps have been written from a more mathematical standpoint, because it is a bit of a different language. But then once we've gone through our geometry, then we'll actually look to applying it. So we'll do some things with black holes, but with a bit of a twist, we'll look at gravity in higher dimensions. We'll also perhaps talk a little bit maybe about gravitational waves, which I gather you didn't do so much on. And we'll just see how it goes, because in some sense, there's a little bit of flexibility and a little bit of fluidity. So having walked in here and decided that no matter how much practice I had, I know I'm going to have a catastrophe with these boards. So you've probably seen this with every lecturer the first sort of couple of days. It's a bit intimidating. However, I've decided this is going to be the IMAX experience. I'm setting myself a challenge to see if we can basically not erase anything for the whole lecture. So I'm going to start there and work my way around, because sometimes it's quite useful, actually, if everything's up so that you can see it during a lecture. So, I'm just going to start by making sure. Sorry about this for people. This I see everybody's going to drift towards the back now. Just by setting out my conventions, just so that it's clear what conventions I'm using. So the first thing, which I think often causes a groan with my collaborators, is that I use a mostly minus signature. So time is like the important thing. If we are a time-like separation from someone, it means we're a positive distance from them. So this is kind of rooted in causality here. Although this is a very common convention, just to make sure, because some people define Riemann the other way around. So this is if you were writing it in components. That's not actually how we're going to define it, but so if you're writing it in components, then Ricci. Is contract on the first and third of Riemann. Again, I think that's pretty standard, but Misner, Thorn, and Wheeler has a whole sort of set of different conventions in it, so I'm just trying to be clear. And then H bar and C are equal to one. So you won't need to stretch around too much, that's just convention stuff. So I prefer to keep G in there because it keeps us at least with some dimensions, which is quite good for keeping us honest, particularly later on if we do extra dimensions. The gravitation, Newton's constant, changes in dimensionality as you hop through the number of space-time dimensions. So it's quite useful to just keep track, not to try and freeze all the dimensions out. So it's particularly good, I think, for sort of keeping interpretation. So now you're going to start seeing some familiar stuff. So I'm going to start by just reviewing again manifolds and how we define vectors. So this should be mostly familiar, but it might be just, again, just slightly different from the way Neil did it. Sort of slightly skewed perspective. So, from our perspective, a manifold is a set of events. So it's things that happen. I mean, how else do we characterize space-time but things that happen? And it looks locally. like a copy of flat space, so R to the n. So that would be an n-dimensional manifold. So again, this should be familiar. So you have your picture of some blob, which is your manifold, some locally flat space. And then I think Neil showed you how you define maps which take you from the manifold into Rn. And then the whole sort of set of these little charts is the manifold. I'm going to be very quick on this because I know you've seen it before. And then we're going to consider what are called C infinity manifolds, which basically means everything is differentiable. So these may be coordinate functions. So I want things to be infinitely differentiable. Because I'm going to want to be doing some differentiation. So there are things such as C1, C2 manifolds people consider, which means you can differentiate once, twice, etc. But let's just keep it easy. We want to be able to keep on differentiating. So what this means is, if you have an overlap of charts, then that means you've got two sets of coordinates for the same little region of space. This might be your x, this might be your y. And so on the overlap, you want this choice of coordinates, this alternative, to be differentiable and infinitely differentiable. That's all it means. And what it really means is it's just a way of saying that everything's going to be nice. We can kind of do what we want in terms of manipulations, and it's just making that formal. So what we really want to do now with differential geometry is we've got this sort of arbitrary set of events, and we know it looks locally like Rn, a space that we're very comfortable with. And then we want to transport structure from this space that we know up onto the manifold. So in other words, we want to do vectors. So in order to do vectors, there are a couple of little steps that we need first. So what we want is to, we start off by saying, right, we're going to define functions on our manifolds, and they're going to be maps which take us from the manifold into the reals. And we want, again, this function to be differentiable, and we're basically going to use the fact that here we've got this is M. And our function will map us down to the reals. But basically, we can also think of F as being, by looking at our copy of Rn, we can also think of that as being a map from our Rn to the reals. And we want that to be infinitely differentiable in local coordinates. So we're sort of thinking of, you know, our f of x mu here being a nice function. So that's taken us from the manifolds down onto the real line. Scared John off. And now we can go the other way. We can take a map from the real line into the manifold. To form a curve. So this is, I'm just sort of drawing pictures to try and sort of keep in mind what we're doing here. So again, it's like sort of taking a piece of string and just importing it into this funny curved space. So here we could think of gamma of t as being like a world line of a particle, or it could be some curve like, you know, circle or an ellipse. That's another example. But this is the idea. We can also sort of imagine an image of a real line sitting in the manifold. And again, we want that to be differentiable when we look at our sort of image in R to the N. So this might be x mu of t, and they would be infinitely differentiable. So the reason I introduced this concept of the curves and the functions is because this is actually how we define vectors. So we think of vectors as being tangents to one of these curves. So that's how we visualize it geometrically. And we define it via differentiation. So here we've got a curve gamma of t. Over here, we've got a function f, which takes us from the manifold to the reals. So before I make an idiot of myself, could we just push these up a little? Or if I press front, is it going to go whizzing to the top? It's going to go whizzing to the top. Right. Oh, yeah. Good. Just because I thought if I start on this, it'll be like... So by combining the function with the curve, we get a sort of real valued function. So we've got the curve, which takes us from the reals into the manifold. And then we go back using a C infinity function back down to the reals. So we end up with a real valued function which we can take the derivative of. So then our vector is simply the operation d by dt. So this is something which is, it's obviously associated with gamma. It's d by dt. It's saying take the derivative along the curve, so hence this tangent vector. But it's, this has got to be true for every single function. And that's what's telling you it's not something that's sort of specific to these infinitely differentiable functions, but it's something which doesn't really, you know, you could almost forget. In fact, we will forget about the f. And it's something which is linked to depends on the gamma and also the point at which you're taking this derivative. So it's something which is intrinsically sort of living or connected to the manifold. So from this, we can see that this T is the same, which is probably what this more familiar notation is the same as this expression here, because we can take, we've got our function. This definition made no mention of the little copy of R to the n, which is sort of lying behind the manifold in every little region. But we could go from P into R to the n here, and then take the derivative with respect to local charts, and then these T mu would be the normal tangent vectors in some local chart. So that's, if you like, a more familiar way of writing it. But really, the vector is the geometric object. Sort of, you don't really care about your coordinate patch underneath. So our vector try and think of the right word here. Our vector T, it's like grounded or based at, if you're better at language than me, you'll find a better word, is based at the point P So again, this is conceptually something you've seen, but I'm just repeating it because it's very important to remember that different points in the manifold are really completely, different and quite independent. So the vector T here need have nothing to do with some other tangent vector sitting at a different point. So the very fact that I've called it a vector is, of course, indicating that it's a member of a vector space. So if I change parameterization, then I can change the length of T. And if I change my curve, then I get different vectors. Am I going to regret that? Maybe I'll just use a fixed board. So I can build up a vector space. So the picture here is, here's one gamma, and here we have P, and there's our T, and then you perhaps draw another curve, gamma hat, and there's another tangent vector S. And so we can build up a vector space which has the same dimensionality as the manifold. And you can sort of see that by just thinking again of this concept of a local chart and the images of the curves in a local chart. You can only go in n different directions. So that's our tangent space. You've played around with the two-sphere as a sort of candidate manifold. And again, what you see there, if you look at a particular point P like the North Pole, you end up with a copy of R squared, which you think of as a piece of paper tangent to the sphere. So the names are very descriptive and sort of they have a very visual connotation. This is geometry. So So this is just associated with P. You can, of course, stack together all the tangent spaces all over your manifold. And so you end up with what's known as the tangent bundle, which is just, if you had the two-sphere, it would be all the sort of different planes depending on the different ways that you went tangent to the two-sphere. So just a note on bases. Since TP of M is a vector space, you have a basis, or indeed all sorts of different choices of bases. So a couple of common ones are the coordinate basis, which is the one that I think was almost exclusively used in the first course. And so the basis, the coordinate basis, is just d by dx mu. So we defined our vector as the tangent to the curve. It is up here, isn't it? Or is it the top one? I can't see. Ah, no, here. So if we just took the individual coordinate axes, the sort of pre-images of the different x, y, and z, et cetera, components of r to the n, then this would give us standard vectors, d by dx mu. But another choice, which you'll be seeing a lot of, is an orthonormal basis, which I'll denote by EA. And this corresponds, you can think of this as EA mu d by dx mu, where you choose this sort of fear or feel bind, where you choose the components so that, like, the dot product of two basis vectors is either 1 or 0 or minus 1 or 0. So obviously, in this case, we have to have a concept of distance. We need our metric here. But that's also a very common and very useful basis. So if you do supersymmetry, you would be seeing this an awful lot. Another comment is that in physics, we use what's known as abstract index notation. This is a sort of subtle concept that Roger Penrose came up with. When you're kind of using tensors in relativity, you tend to write down T mu. So you'll write that down as being a vector. And that's fine. Because you kind of know the rules of the game. So for example, you've done the covariant derivative. You took the covariant derivative of this object, you would write down the partial derivative and the gamma terms. So you know exactly what you were doing. But strictly speaking, mathematically, T mu are really the components. So you see where I wrote the vector there, T, is the tangent to the curve, and then I wrote it out here in a form that would be more familiar. Those T mu are really the components of the vector T in the coordinate basis. I'll put it a wee bit. I'll do that and then maybe talk a bit and give you a chance. This is kind of a bit of a fine point, actually. I just wanted to mention it because just to make you think about what you're doing, not to say it shouldn't be done, but to kind of bring in a bit of thought and a bit of awareness that what you're really doing when you're doing vectors is you're dealing with geometric objects, something which has a sort of concrete reality. It's a vector, you know, is being something with a direction and a length, is a very geometrical concept, whereas T mu, if you think about it, is just an ordered set. It's sort of the X component, the Y component, the Z component, and so on. So it's the same if you think back when you first met vectors. You could either think of them as being some ordered pair if you were in R squared or triplet in R cubed, or you could think of them as actually being like a little arrow, something with a direction and a length. And what the message is from differential geometry is really it's the latter concept that is what the vector actually is. And it's only because you can map your manifold locally to Rn that you can represent it as this sort of set of numbers. And so just for the first few lectures where I'm kind of being a bit more mathematical, I'm going to try and draw this distinction because I'm going to use the geometrical notation quite a bit. And at times, when I write, for example, GAB, I don't really mean the metric. I really do mean the components in a particular basis. And that means that they're scalars. So when you do this, when you took the covariant derivative of T mu, it would just turn into partial derivatives because they're a set of scalars. And then you get your gamma, so the connection coming from the fact that you've got to think about what basis you wrote it down in the first place. So this seems like one of these sort of, you know, fine points, and to some extent it is, but I just want to kind of draw your attention to it because you may get confused later on when I sometimes sort of say, oh, well, these GAB, these are scalars because they're just components. And there's always this sort of slightly in conflict from the practical application of geometry in general relativity. So I'll just put that there because it's one of these conceptual things. So now we've got what vectors are. We've defined them geometrically in terms of maps, you know, from the reals to the manifolds and back down again. And so now I want to build up very briefly the tensor algebra. So the first step to that is, of course, covectors. And covectors are basically duals to the vectors, and they are maps. From vectors into the real. So a covector will take a vector and give you a real number. So I might write the sort of Brahn-Ket notation. I may sometimes literally write it as if it were a function, but a covector is a map from the vectors. So this U here is a member of TP of M into the reals. So that's what a covector does for you. And the set of covectors is called a cotangent space. And it's denoted TP star of M. So it's really saying if you've got some basis or some vector space, it's actually easy to think of it almost in terms of a basis, then you can form a dual basis. Sometimes I may underline my geometric. I'll try and remember to underline the geometric quantities. So a dual basis to some arbitrary basis of your vector space simply says, it's think of it like your dot product, that if omega 1 gives you dotted with E1 gives you 1, if you dot it with any of the other basis vectors, it gives you 0. So again, you know, this concept of a dual basis, I guess, is familiar if you're thinking about sort of lattices as well. So you get, it's exactly the same thing. So if you think about what this is in terms of components, in a coordinate basis, if we look here at what our vector and covector are, then This is saying that omega alpha, oops, in terms of the coordinate basis, dx alpha of d by dx beta is really just dx alpha by dx beta, which is delta alpha beta. And so you get the familiar expression that you would write down if you were taking a dot product of two vectors, except, of course, the real difference is that this thing is inherently a covector. It's inherently got one of these downstairs indices. You can only raise and lower indices once you've got a metric. We don't have a metric yet, but at least what is written down in terms of those components is familiar, and it's what you would expect in terms of making a combination or a scalar from two objects which, again, it's not a vector. This is the vector, and this is the covector, but again, they're like vectors. So again, all of these things you've already done, but it's just a slightly different spin on it. So I'm not really going to go into detail, but as you are aware, you can take combinations, the tensor product of various vectors and covectors, and make up higher rank tensors, both contravariant, which is your standard vector format, as well as covariant, which is your covector format. So now I want to talk or review again, differentiation on manifolds, but I want to do it from, again, a slightly different perspective, because I'm going to introduce some different ways of differentiating apart from the covariant derivative. So let's just have a little thought about why differentiation is hard. So we've already done covariant differentiation. But again, let's just have a think about what's going on geometrically. So I always think it's useful to kind of just remind ourselves what we mean by differentiation, because this will then take us forward into the different ways that you can define a derivative on a manifold. So when we're doing normal real functions, to get the derivative at a particular point, we go just a little bit away, that's h. We subtract off the original value, this gives us a small incremental amount. We divide by how far we went away. We keep doing that, making h smaller and smaller and smaller, and we get the gradient at t naught. So that's the process of differentiation for reals. So if we try and transport that on the manifold, what exactly is going to change? So what goes wrong or what's different? So the first thing, since I can't move the backboard, I'll move over to here, is that we have to think the things that we've got here is we've got h. So that's one thing we've got. We've got to think about what it means to go a little distance. And then we've also got to think about f. So what are we differentiating and what does it mean adding a little bit to where we are? So to differentiate on the manifold, this is a real number. So somehow we're imagining that we're now going to a point on the manifold. So we might want to replace T naught by P. So that's our first complication. If we want to move, how do we move away from P? And so, first of all, that's one thing. And then, how do we compare, even if we do know how to move a little bit away from P? Say, how do we compare a vector at, say, P plus delta P? With a vector at P, because, yeah?
The problem in this, I think, is it supposed to go from one tangent to the space to another?
That's right, yeah. So this is, so exactly. How do we compare a vector? If we've moved a little bit away from P, we're at a new tangent space. It's a different one. It's a completely different vector space. So how can we... You know the rules of a vector space. You can add, subtract, you know, vectors in the same vector space, but you've got to think about these vector spaces here at P and P plus delta P. They're two completely different objects. So I've got a vector in R squared here and a vector in R squared here. Doesn't mean anything to try and add them up or subtract them because they're not in the same vector space. And so thinking about some of these questions gives us different examples of differentiation on manifolds. So you've already seen the covariant derivative. Which we'll sort of just recap on later. So what the covariant derivative does is gives you a way of linking these different tangent spaces. But there are other ways that you can take a derivative. And as far as I'm aware, you didn't cover this in the last course, which is the Lie derivative and the exterior derivative. And so what I'd like to do is talk about these different ways of differentiating first, because neither of them actually require a metric. So I'm just wondering, it's kind of, we've got 5 minutes left. I'm wondering what I can say in 5 minutes that's kind of useful. So what I think I would like to do is just sort of set up some of the ideas that we'll then come back to tomorrow morning to talk about forms and exterior derivative. So again, this is recap, but it's also linking in with what you did in the first relativity course. So just to make a link with the sort of abstract index notation or writing components of vectors. So one way you can think of your vector, and probably it's a very common way of introducing vectors, is to think about what happens under coordinate transformations. So if you go from x coordinates to y coordinates, you simply take your d by dx, you know, because we know our coordinate transformations are all differentiable, we can simply take ourselves from x coordinates to y coordinates, and then we can say that this is the new vector t in the new y basis. And so that is a contravariant transformation. So that's another way that vectors sometimes get defined. It's saying that it's an object, you know, you've got your t mus, and they transform that way under a coordinate transformation. And again, for covectors, you've kind of got it the other way around. It transforms with the coordinate transformation. I want to see how visible all this is, because I'm not sure whether I'll keep doing this writing all the way around. It's a bit low down, isn't it, from over here? Yep. So this side is higher, though, isn't it, I think, by the look of it. So this is how we see that taking just a simple coordinate derivative, if we want to do the derivative of vectors, it will tell us why it doesn't work if we just try to do something which was the naive and simple extension of what you write down for your standard real function derivative. So I'll just write on the top bit of a board. Hopefully everyone can see it. Since I've started, I'll finish this way. So a simple way of taking our definition of derivative might have been to just say take a sort of d by dy or d by dx. So we might say, well, let's just do that and let's see what happens. So the d by dy can go into a d by dx, no problem there. And then we know our transformation rule for v. And so we write that in. And again, hopefully this is familiar to everyone. So our first piece is good. And we take our derivative and hit the V. We've got the x covariant derivative, sorry, x partial derivative with a contravariant piece, transformation piece, and a covariant transformation piece, both of which, fine, good, that's what we would like. But we get an extra term. And so what we have here is something which fails to be a vector, covector, tensor, whatever. So what we'll see tomorrow is different ways of getting rid of that piece. You've already seen how to do it by using the covariant derivative, the gamma symbols. There are other ways of doing it. One way is to notice, I mean, it's a crude way of putting it, but is to notice that that thing that's not geometric object is actually symmetric in the mu and nu indices. So it's a second partial derivative, second order partial derivative, but partial differentiation commutes. And so that particular object, if we could somehow anti-symmetrize derivatives, then we could get rid of it. And so that's the basis, or if you like, what happens when you do exterior differentiation, which leads us to the idea of forms, which are very useful. But also another way of getting rid of it is to think, well, hang on, the reason we've got that is because that new primed index, the index with which we're differentiating, is like a free index. In other words, by taking a derivative, we're trying to increase the rank of our vector or tensor. And so if we somehow didn't do that, if instead we tried to pick a direction to differentiate along so that we were somehow mirroring this definition by taking a derivative just somehow along a line, then maybe we could also get rid of that extra term. And that sort of concept will lead us to the Lie derivative. So in the Lie derivative, we differentiate with respect to some other vector field. So what we're doing there is we're taking derivatives along some vector field, along the lines, tangent lines of a vector field. And so that's another way we can get rid of that boxed term. So I'll do both of those, and then we'll just come back briefly recapping the covariant derivative, but thinking about it from a slightly different perspective, not just thinking about it in terms of the sort of connection coefficients, the gamma symbols. We'll think about it more in terms of how it links, how it connects the tangent spaces together. Okay, I'll stop there. So questions, just either, well, plague me now or plague me later. So I should say, you're probably aware, but Latham can't lecture cosmology on Wednesday for the first 2 of the 3 weeks. So there's going to be a little bit of jiggling around with the lecture. So this coming Wednesday, you're getting a double whammy of gravity. And I think it'll be like the 10-ish slot and the 11:30-ish slot or whatever for this Wednesday and the following Wednesday. So things will be dancing around a little bit, but hopefully it's on the web somewhere. But it's a warning.